Thank you all for joining. I'm sorry that we moved the time of the shiur from last night to tonight, but I'm thrilled that everybody's able to join tonight. And we'll be discussing this week's Torah portion, which is Parshas Chukas. Parshas Chukas is a very chock-full parsha. There's a lot of powerful stories in the parsha. It begins, interestingly, with the law of Parah Aduma, the red cow. The Torah defines this as Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the chok of the Torah. Adam ki yamus ba'ohel. If a person dies in a tent, kal asher ba'ohel. Everything that's in that tent, everything that's under the same roof as the dead body, yitma shivas yamim, will be tameh for 7 days. That's the impurity of tumas meis. Tumas meis is a very powerful impurity. It's very hard to remove it. A person who's tameh meis is not allowed to enter into machane levia, not allowed to enter into the camp. Actually, the Machane Shechina, he can enter Machane Levia. He cannot enter into the camp of the Divine Presence, the area of the Mishkan, and nowadays the area of the Azara. If you were to go up onto the Temple Mount, so there's an area that is 187 amos in length by 135 amos in width. It's about the area of the Golden Dome and a little bit before that, that a person who's tameh meis is not allowed to enter. And the only way to remove tumas meis is by using the red cow, the parah aduma. The red cow is a cow, the Torah gives us many details about it in this week's parsha, that's 3 years old, and it's totally red. It doesn't have any, yellow hairs, white hairs, it's totally red. Every hair of it is red. And asher lo ala aleha ol. It never did any work. Not only did it never do any work, normally a cow pulls a plow or pulls a wagon, it never carried any weight. A twig never fell on it, a branch never fell on it, a package was never carried by it. A fully red cow that's never done any work. So this red cow, when it's 3 years of old, is actually taken outside of the temple. It's not slaughtered where most korbanos are slaughtered. Most sacrifices are slaughtered next to the altar. This red cow is taken out to Mount of Olives, to the eastern side of the temple. It is slaughtered outside of the temple. The blood is sprinkled towards the temple in the direction of Temple Mount. And then it is burned in a big bonfire with cedar wood as well as hyssop branches and red string, and it's made into ashes. These ashes are then mixed with some ashes from the original, from the first red cow ever that we had, that Moshe Rabbeinu performs in this week's Parsha. And these ashes travel around the land of Israel. And if there's somebody who was tameh meis, someone who became impure with a death impurity on day 3 after the event and on day 7 after the event, ashes of the red cow mixed with living spring waters are sprinkled onto him through a bundle of hyssop. And that's a key part of his purification. Then after that happens on day 3 and on day 7, he can go to the mikvah on day 7, and that night he becomes fully pure. This law, the law of the red cow, is defined by the Torah as Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the chok of the Torah. This is the law that's the chok law. After we have Zos Chukas HaTorah, then we have in our parsha, it's the 40th year after the Jews have left Egypt, and Miriam dies. Miriam, the sister of Moshe Rabbeinu, passes away. And when Miriam dies, the water that was miraculously with the Jewish people stops. The Jewish people had with them a rock that back in Parshat B'Shalach, Moshe Rabbeinu had hit, and by hitting the rock produced water. That rock traveled with the Jews through their journeys in the desert. Now it's the 40th year. Miriam dies and the water stops. Apparently the water was coming in the merit of Miriam. So once Miriam passed away, the water stopped coming. So the people complained to Moshe, what are we going to drink? What are we going to live? How are we going to live? Why'd you bring us here? What's going on? So Moshe Rabbeinu is very disappointed. He's had a lot of complaints with the earlier generation of Jews. Now again, he's having complaints. And Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, take the staff, gather all the people in front of the rock, and command the rock to produce water. Moshe Rabbeinu takes the staff, gathers all the people, and then he gets frustrated. He says to the people, Shimu na hamorim, listen, you rebels. Are we going to get water out of this rock? You rebels, you're upsetting, you're getting me upset, complaining against Hashem. And then Moshe, instead of hitting the rock, instead of talking to the rock, actually picks up his staff and hits the rock twice, and water comes out. God then tells Moshe and Aaron, Yan lo hemantin bi lahakdisheni, since you didn't believe in me to sanctify me in front of the Jewish people, you're going to die in the desert too, and you're not going to be able to enter into Eretz Yisrael, into the land of Israel. So these are the first two sections in our parsha, the mitzvah of Parah Aduma, and then the death of Miriam and Moshe Rabbeinu's failure in hitting the rock instead of talking to the rock, and as a result, the Jews not meriting to enter into the land of Israel and being stuck in the desert. One of the questions that a lot of commentators raise is, why did the Torah wait till here to tell us about Parah Aduma? Parah Aduma is necessary for a Mishkan, to have a sanctuary with laws that people who are impure cannot enter it. It's necessary to have a process to remove impurity. Back in the book of Vayikra, we already learned about all sorts of types of impurity in Parsha Shmini, in Parshas Tazria, and Parshas Mitzora. We learned about the impurity of rodents. We learned about the impurity of Tzara'as, how to remove that impurity. We learned about Zav and Nida. So that would have been an obvious place to tell us also about Tumas Meis and Parah Aduma. Why wait till here in the book of Bamidbar, in Parshas Chukas, the middle of Bamidbar, here to suddenly say, by the way, there's a law. If you have death impurity, you have to have a red cow, you have to slaughter the red cow, burn the red cow, the ashes have to be mixed with spring water and then sprinkled on the person to make him pure. Why wait till here, till Bamidbar? This should be a story, or this should be lessons that we should have had much earlier. This is really necessary for the Mishkan. It could have been somewhere in Vayikra, could have been around Shmini, Tazria, Mitzora, maybe Emor. These are parshios that deal with purity and impurity, karbanos. That's where we should have had the law of the death impurity. Why wait till here? So one beautiful drasha, sad, but a very beautiful drasha, was offered once by my father's teacher, Rav Yosef Dov Soloveitchik. Rav Soloveitchik said that traditionally people translate the word chok as a law that's beyond understanding. Beyond understanding, we can't understand it. And then they say Parah Aduma is called Chukas HaTorah, the law of the Torah, the Chok of the Torah, because no one can understand Parah Aduma. And why do they say it's so hard to understand Parah Aduma? And they'll say, how could it be that the same item, the red cow, on the one hand creates purity on the impure, but yet it also imposes tuma on the pure, the pure person who's handling the ashes and mixing them with the spring water and dropping them on the person who's tameh, he himself becomes impure. So how could the same item create tahara and tuma? It's the same thing. That's a chok. It's beyond our understanding. Hard to understand. It's chukas haTorah. So Rav Soloveitchik said, you know, that doesn't seem like such a big question. There are all sorts of things that for some people will have one impact and for other people another impact. You know, there's a famous Gemara The Gemara says if you find that the evil urge is overcoming you and it's very hard to resist. So best things should be to learn Torah. Learning Torah is not enough to overcome the evil urge. Then you should, you know, say Kriyat Shema. And if that's not enough, so then the Gemara says, actually the Gemara says first you should anger your Yetzer Tov against your Yetzer Hara. If that doesn't work, then you should say Kriyat Shema. And if that doesn't work, Yazkir Lo Yom Hamisa. Remind the evil urge is a day of death coming. Remind the evil urge that a human being is not going to live forever. At some point we're all going to die. As it says in Tehillim, Lam Natzeach Livnei Korach Mizmor, as it says in the chapter of Tehillim, chapter 49, Kilova Moso Yikach HaKol, Lo Yerid Acharav Kvodo, person's not going to take his wealth with him into the grave, he's not going to have his honor with him after he passes away. We're all going to die. You know, Nafsho Yavi Belachmo, right? A person's going to bring his soul. That'll be his real bread. His real accomplishment is what he has with his soul. And if we think about death, and we think about the fact that human beings are not going to live forever, none of us are going to live forever, so that should shake us up to overcome the evil urge and to do the righteous things, to do the holy things, to do the mitzvos. So the Gemara says, Yaskilo Yom HaMisos, everybody asks, if that's the most powerful antidote to the evil urge, think about death. Think about a room of a tahara, think about a cemetery, think about dead bodies, think about death, and then you overcome the evil urge. So if that's the case, so why don't we start right away by thinking about death? Why does the Gemara say, if you have the evil urge attacking you, first get angry with it with the Yetzer HaTov? If that doesn't work, say Kriyat Shema or learn Torah. If that doesn't work, go to the Beis Medrash. If that doesn't work, then remind him of the day of death. Start right away with the day of death. And the classical answer, Rav Kook says it in Ein Hayad, others say it as well, the classical answer is, reminder of the day of death is a double-edged sword. If a person really needs that to overcome the evil urge, it's good. But on the other hand, thinking about the day of death can also depress a person. And if it depresses a person, then it's very bad. It's not always so good. It depends for who. Somebody who's upbeat and able to overcome his evil urge without thinking about the day of the death. Then reminder of the day of death actually creates sadness and depression. A person's not going to serve God the way he should. Tanya begins his book, Sefer HaTanya, by saying, Hashem wants us to serve God b'simcha v'tzov levav, with joy, with the goodness of heart, with optimism. He's referencing the Ariya Kadosh. The Ariya Kadosh told Rav Chaim Vital that everything he achieved because he was living life with simcha shel mitzvah, with the joy of doing mitzvahs. That's why he achieved the great levels of inspiration and Ruach HaKodesh and Kedusha, all because of the simcha shel mitzvah. So joy is very important. Thinking about Yom HaMisa can depress a person. On the other hand, for other people, people who are about to fall into sin, Yaskir Lo Yom HaMisa is a very good thing. It's very important. I remember my teacher, Aaron Soloveitchik, he once expressed this thought with a parable of the old world. In the old world, they used to drink sometimes cod liver oil. So if somebody's sick, the cod liver oil maybe is going to clear out the system and heal the person. But if somebody's healthy and he drinks cod liver oil, it's going to make him sick. So the same thing could be with the Parah Adumah. The Parah Adumah can help the person who is Tameh. And yet, it's so powerful, it can hurt the person who's taller. Think about Chas V'Shalom, if somebody has cancer and they need to have chemo treatments. So the chemo can wipe out the cancer. But if somebody would zap a healthy person with chemo, it would hurt a person. So why is it so problematic? How could it be the red cow? And on the one hand, it creates purity, it also creates impurity, so it's a chok, it's beyond understanding. Rav Soloveitchik pointed out further that Rashi, at the end of the section of Parah Adumah, Rashi has a lengthy explanation of all the details of Parah Adumah from Rav Moshe Adarshan. Rav Moshe Adarshan said, Parah Adumah is a reminder of the sin of the golden calf and the atonement for the sin of the golden calf. Calf is a baby cow, Parah is an adult cow. If a baby makes a mess, sometimes they call the mother and they ask the mother to clean up. Parah Adumah is cleaning up the mess of the baby. This is an atonement for the sin of the golden calf. The golden calf brought death back to the Jewish people. The Parah Adumah is the atonement. It reminds man also of the sin of Adam HaRishon. There are explanations for Parah Adumah. So what makes it Chukas HaTorah? Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the Chok of the Torah. So Rav Soloveitchik suggested a different, a novel interpretation. Why is Parah Adumah called Zos Chukas HaTorah? Rav Soloveitchik said that human beings, we've been blessed with an intellect, but we also have very strong emotions. And sometimes we have an emotional experience that's so powerful and so fierce that our intellect just can't handle it. The emotions are so stormy, the intellect can't get a word in. And that's the nature of experiencing death, ptira. When somebody loses a close relative, someone they love, death is so upsetting. There are all sorts of explanations for why there's death. It's a punishment for the sin of Adam HaRishon. Ein tzadik ba'aretz asher ya'aseh tov lo yechta. Nobody's perfect. We need to have a kapara. We need to have an atonement. But all of those explanations, those are explanations. When someone's living through it, someone has suffered the loss of somebody they love, emotionally they just can't understand. But why? Why? And they feel broken. That's the chukas haTorah. The great chok of the Torah is that there are going to be experiences in life that people do not understand, that we don't get. We don't understand why. These things happen. It's part of Hashem's decrees of the way we should live, what we should experience. And so death itself, that's the chok. When a Jew encounters death and he's emotionally distraught, the response is, there's a lot that I don't understand. I don't understand why there's so much pain sometimes in this world. I don't know why there's such sorrow. And I'm going to continue to serve God despite the fact that I do not understand. It's a hope. It's beyond my understanding. Sorrow in the world is something which is beyond our understanding. That's really how Rav Soloveitchik understood the book of Iyov. The book of Iyov is really about the question, why does a righteous person, Iyov, why does he suffer? And according to the way Rav Soloveitchik reads the verses, God doesn't directly answer that question. God doesn't tell Iyov, you suffered because of X, Y, and Z. God tells Iyov, can you be me? Could you create? Can you, set up weather systems, bring rain, bring famine? Do you have my powers? Can you give life? Can you? And Iyov describes all sorts of amazing aspects of nature, deer that give birth and whales and earth creatures, big earth creatures, and these amazing facts all over the natural world. And God says to you, where were you? Right? Efo ha'isa biyaz the arts. Where were you when I established the earth? Can you do what I do? You can't. So if you can't do what I do, you also can't comprehend why I do. You're not God. You can't understand God. Why is the tzaddik virala? Why does the righteous person suffer? It's a chok. It's beyond understanding. The reaction should not be to try to figure out why it happened, but to think that now that something has happened, what message does God want me to take away from it? What mitzvah am I supposed to do? What avoda? But the fact that there is suffering, the fact that there is death, that's the chok of the Torah. Says Rav Soloveitchik, in light of this new understanding that Zos Chukas HaTorah is referring to death, not referring to Paraduma. Death is the chok that's beyond understanding. Tzadik Viralo is the chok that's beyond understanding. Now we can understand why we only have this section here. Because the Ramban tells us, why did Korach revolt in last week's Parsha? Korach's upset. Moshe Rabbeinu, you shouldn't be the leader. Aaron shouldn't be the Kohen Gadol. Everybody should have a chance. It should be a democracy. Let's give other people a chance. Why is Korach complaining only then? Why didn't he complain earlier? So the Ramban explains that Korach tried to take advantage of weakness. He saw that there was the sin of the spies. And after the sin of the spies, now the Jews are not going to enter Eretz Yisrael. So everybody's disappointed. They have nothing to look forward to. They're not going to enter the land of Israel. They're all going to die out in the desert. So once people are disappointed and they're depressed, then Korach tries to harness that sense of grievance to turn against Moshe, to turn against Aaron, to try to take advantage of it for himself, to make himself the leader. Because that's what a demagogue does when he sees that people are upset. He tries to gather them around him and take advantage of their feelings to now grab the throne. And then we have Parshas Chukas, right after Korach. So Korach, according to the Ramban, is right after the sin of the spies. The sin of the spies was in the second year. They left Egypt. They spent about 7 weeks getting to Sinai, 11 months or so, almost 12 months at Har Sinai. Then they start traveling to Eretz Yisrael. They send the spies. The spies come back. We have Parshas Meraglim, Shlach. Right after the spies come back, we have Korach. And then we have Chukas. After Parah Aduma, we have the death of Miriam here in Chukas, which is in the 40th year. So Chukas, Korach is already is the second year when we left Egypt. In Chukas, the second paragraph, second section, is already the 40th year. So what's the bridge between Korach, year 2, and the death of Miriam, year 40? The bridge is Parah Aduma. Because this was a generation that had nothing to look forward to. This was a generation from year 2 to year 40 that knew they would just die. 38 years of death and never succeeding to get to Eretz Yisrael. So when people know that there's nothing to look forward to, it's very hard. So the answer to that is Zos Chukas HaTorah. Parshas Parah said here, this is the chok, suffering, disappointment, nothing to look forward to. Why do righteous suffer? Why is there death? How do we handle death? It's a chok. These are things that are beyond our understanding. Hashem is beyond us. He made us. We don't have the ability to make ourselves. We don't have the ability to do what He did. We can't make worlds the way He made worlds. We can't create life the way He created life. He's the creator. So there are things that we don't understand also. We don't understand the chok of suffering. We don't understand it. And with the fact that we don't understand, we still continue in our avodas Hashem. We still continue to do mitzvos. We still continue to serve God. Because He created us and He wants us to do these mitzvos. And so we do them with pride and with love and with joy and with celebration and with the commitment that we're going to stay committed even when we don't understand. So since this section has to really encompass the whole generation of the desert, which is a generation that is looking forward, unfortunately, to death. That's why here is where we have Zos Chukas HaTorah. This is the chok of the Torah. This is beyond understanding. And even though there are things that are beyond understanding, we continue on with Avodas Hashem. We continue on to serve God. That's an idea that Rav Soloveitchik gave. I saw another idea, it was presented in a very sweet way by Rabbi Binyamin Kamenetsky of the five towns of Yeshiva of South Shore. He said there's a story that during World War II, one of the senators got a request from the administration of President Harry Truman to immediately approve an expenditure of $2 billion for scientific research. So he called up the person in the War Department. $2 billion for scientific research? We're in a war. You know, if you ask me for planes, for tanks, for ammunition, that's one thing. But scientific research, $2 billion in 1945? So the fellow said, Senator, it's a secret, but we're going to split the atom. And so the senator said, what do you mean split the atom? How's that going to help us? He didn't understand how it could help. Why would they spend in the middle of a war $2 billion? He didn't want to approve it. But in the end, everybody did understand that the splitting of the atom was really what ended the war. Because they figured out how to split the atom, they were able to drop the nuclear bombs on Hiroshima and Nagasaki. And that's what stopped World War II. That's what ended the war. That's what defeated the Japanese. So sometimes there are certain things that happen, and you have to do them even though you don't understand. The senator didn't understand. Why would we spend billions of dollars for such a project, for science, in the middle of a war, when there's all sorts of challenges? But the opposite. Even though you don't understand, go ahead and do it. And that's the right thing to do. Do without understanding. The same, perhaps, is one of the themes here in the book of Bamidbar. In the book of Bamidbar, there are a lot of complaints against Moshe. The complaints have a common thread. People demanding to understand. For example, think about Parshas Korach. In Parshas Korach, it's right after Parshas Shlach. So Rashi says, what's the connection between Korach and Shlach? Rashi says, in Shlach, the end of the Parshas, the mitzvah of tzitzis. Mitzvah of tzitzis, Hashem gave us a mitzvah to affix 8 strings to a 4-cornered garment. One of those 8 strings should be dyed blue with the tchelis dye. So the Korach, tchelis is very expensive. Korach comes to Moshe Rabbeinu wearing a 4-cornered garment, all tchelis. The whole thing is dyed blue. Every single thread is dyed blue. There must have been thousands of threads in this garment. He says, Moshe Rabbeinu, it's a 4-cornered garment. Do I have to attach another string of dyed blue? Moshe Rabbeinu says, of course, yeah, you have to attach it. So Korach says, but it makes no sense. If Hashem wants to see my dedication, that I'm willing to spend a lot of money on a blue string, here I have a whole garment blue. I shouldn't have to spend now also on a blue string. Then Korach comes to Moshe with another question. If you have a room, and the whole room is filled with Sifrei Torah, the whole room has Sifrei Torah. So the room is kulo svarim. The whole room is hundreds of Sifrei Torah. Kosher Sifrei Torah. Do you need to put a mezuzah on the doorway in front of that room? The mezuzah is a little section of the Sefer Torah, 2 paragraphs out of the Torah. Here you have hundreds of paragraphs in each scroll, and you have hundreds of scrolls. So Moshe said, yeah. Hashem said, put a mezuzah on the doorway. Korach said, it doesn't make sense to me. That makes no sense. Then Korach ran around and he said, the same way Moshe Rabbeinu, he wouldn't even call him Moshe, he called him Ben Amram, the son of Amram, the same way the son of Amram says these illogical things. To put a blue string on a garment that's already blue, to put a little Torah on a doorway on a room that's already filled with Torahs, doesn't make any sense. He made it up. It can't be from God. The fact that he's the ruler is also something he made up. It didn't come from God. Aaron's the leader. It's also something made up. It didn't come from the Almighty. Korach's protests is that Korach is trying to say things have to make sense. It doesn't make sense. I'm not doing it. The spies, you can view that the same way. The spies also are complaining. It doesn't make sense. Hashem's taking us to the land where people are dying in this land. This is a land that's very difficult. This is the good land. It doesn't make sense to me, so I'm not going. So in the middle of Sefer Bamidbar, where we have all these complaints about people trying to make things make sense to them, the Torah has Zos Chukas HaTorah. There's a law that's beyond understanding. Para Aduma. It's beyond understanding. And that's the whole point of the law. You should learn from there to all the rest of the Torah. Do things even though they don't make sense to you, like that senator had to do. He had to go and approve the expenditure even though it didn't make sense to him. He couldn't understand it. But go do it. You have to go do it. As Jews, our core should be that we are committed to listening to Hashem, especially when it doesn't make sense to us. David HaMelech says, Kol mitzvascha emuna. All of your mitzvos are emuna. Rav Simchon Rafal Hirsch and many commentators explain, when somebody has emuna, it's faith in Hashem. It doesn't make sense to him, but he has faith. Kol mitzvascha emuna. All of your mitzvos are emuna. That has to be the underlying inspiration for every mitzvah. It doesn't have to make sense to me. It doesn't have to be based on my seichel. Emuna, just with faith, with trust. I'm going to do what Hashem tells me to do. And since that was such a challenge for this generation, the generation going through the desert, all their complaints, things don't make sense to them, that's why especially them, they have to hear Zos Chukas HaTorah, there's a law which is a chok, and that law which is a chok, which is beyond understanding, that law says, just go and listen to the will of Hashem, even when it doesn't make sense to you. Just listen to the will of Hashem, to follow what Hashem wants you to do. So a third explanation for why this is the spot where we have the Parshas Para. Again, we have the explanation of Rav Soloveitchik, Parshas Para representing Chok belongs here because this is a generation of death. They need to hear that there are chukim, there are things we don't understand. The explanation of Rabbi Kamenetsky in Book of Bamidbar, especially when people are complaining that things don't make sense to them, they want everything to make sense. They have to hear that you have to have a commitment that's beyond that which makes sense. Another idea I saw suggested by the Shem Yishmuel. Shem Yishmuel suggests that maybe Moshe Rabbeinu could only feel the real meaning and the real insight of Para Aduma at this point. At the end of 40 years, that's when Moshe Rabbeinu could understand and grasp Para Aduma as much as possible. And then Moshe Rabbeinu would be able to make the first para, the first red cow. And that's why it's here in the 40th year, that's where the Torah mentions the law of Paraduma. Why is this? We know that the Gemara says in Masechet Nedarim, the verse says about man, Vatachasreyu ma'at me'elohim, and you made him a little bit less than God. The Gemara explains that there are 49 gates of wisdom. Mem Teshari Bina, 49 gates of wisdom. Many people reach certain amounts of gates. The greatest of people can get to 49 gates. They can't get through the 50th gate, a little bit less. The 50th gate is reserved. That's what the Chasrei Ma'at, a little bit less. However, the Kabbalists say that Moshe Rabbeinu, at the end of his life, he actually reached the 50th gate. The Kabbalists teach that when somebody reaches the 50th gate and absorbs it, either of holiness or of the opposite of holiness, he reaches a level with a certain permanence, something very lasting. The 50th gate of Kedusha is a deep, deep permanence of attachment to Hashem, of great life. And that level of tremendous attachment to God, that's that permanent attachment, that's what can purify even the impurity of the death. And so for Moshe Rabbeinu to get Parah Adumah, to feel that level of permanence, of permanent attachment to Hashem, he had to reach the 50th gate, which he only did at the end of 40 years in the desert. Because after 40 years of learning and Hashem teaching him, Hashem kept teaching Moshe at the Mishkan, kept teaching him further insights. After 40 years of insights, now Moshe had been given 49 gates, and now Moshe could jump through the 50th on his own. He now could take that 49 as the catapult to then go into the 50th gate. Once he had the 50th gate, now he's grasping the 50th level of holiness. So at that 50th level, he can truly grasp Parah Adumah. Once he grasps Parah Adumah, he has a level of Kedusha that's so strong, he can now purify and take away Tumas Meis, the death impurity. So three explanations why this is the spot for Parah Adumah. Again, the next section in our parsha is the sin of hitting the rock, the sin of Mei Meriva. So I'd like to share, again, a very beautiful thought from the Shemi Shmuel about the sin. Rashi's explanation of the sin is very difficult. Rashi says, Hashem told Moshe to take the staff, gather all the people in front of the rock with Aaron, and to speak to the rock. Moshe gathers all the people. He gets upset. He hits the rock twice. And Hashem's very disappointed. Hashem said, you didn't sanctify my name. What did he do? He hit the rock. He didn't talk to the rock. If he would have talked to the rock, that would have been a greater sanctification of Hashem's name. He spoke to the fact that he hit and didn't talk. That was the sin. So the Shemi Shmuel asks, both seem to be pretty big miracles. To hit a rock with a staff and then for water to come out is a great miracle. Why is that not a big enough miracle? It had to have been the miracle of talking to the rock. It was only the miracle of hitting the rock and making water come out. That's not big enough. And for that, Moshe Rabbeinu loses the right to enter into the land of Israel. What was Moshe thinking? If Hashem told him to talk to the rock, why didn't Moshe talk to the rock? Why was he thinking he should hit the rock? So the Shemi Shmuel says a very beautiful, beautiful answer. There's a halacha in the Masechet Megillah that Tashmishei Kedusha Nignazin, Tashmishei Mitzvah Nizrakin. The law is that if you have an item that you use for a mitzvah, say you have an item that you used to hold your lechem mishnah on it, a challah board, set on it, krasim l'shabbos kodesh, k'dosh Hashem mechubad, honor Shabbos, kras l'shabbos oneg, k'dosh Hashem mechubad, honor Shabbos, respect it, and phrases from the psukim in Yeshaya, and you had two challahs on it. Every Shabbos you would enjoy your Shabbos with this challah board. Now, somebody comes and gives you a new gift, a nicer challah board. What do you do with the old challah board? So that's called tashmishei mitzvah, an item used for a mitzvah. An item used for a mitzvah, once you don't need it anymore, you can throw it out. Based on the letter of the law, a person who shook lulav for the 7 days of Sukkot, Esrog. Finished using it, can throw it out. That's the basic letter of the law. Throw it out. However, tashmishei kedusha, items, not just of mitzvah, but items of holiness, nignazin, they can't be thrown out. They have to be put into shemos. They have to be put into a place of a respectful place. So, for example, someone who has tefillin, which has God's name in it, has parshios of Torah in it, a sefer Torah that gets worn out, a megillah that gets worn out, they have to be buried. They cannot be thrown out. You can't put them in with the garbage. So apparently, there's a certain difference. When you do a mitzvah with an item, you did a mitzvah. Once the mitzvah is done, you're not doing the mitzvah anymore. The item goes back to being nothing. But when you have an item which is a piece of Torah, an item of kedusha, of holiness, an item of God's name, tefillin, mezuzah, sefer Torah, megillah, even if the item is no longer usable because the letters have been worn out or something like of the sort, since the item was God's name never fully leaves. That we have really when we think about the Temple Mount nowadays, you know, there's been so much friction because of the Temple Mount over the last month and a half. Temple Mount for us, from our point of view, is still holy. There's still Kedusha there. You might ask, why is there holiness? We don't have a Beit HaMikdash, we're not offering sacrifices, we don't have a Mizbeach. What makes the Temple Mount holy? The Arabs are there, they're praying there, they're playing soccer there, they have their structures there, they're rioting there. What makes the Temple Mount holy? The answer is that since the Beis HaMikdash was there, Hashem's presence was there. And where Hashem's presence was manifest, even when it's not apparent, there's a remnant of it left. Hashem leaves a remnant of his presence there. The Beis HaMikdash, even if it's not standing, there's a remnant of it that's still there. Wherever you have the Shekhinah, wherever you have the divine presence, wherever you have Hashem's name, even if it's not in an acute form, at the very least it'll be there in some measure. That's why if you have a Sefer Torah, it has Hashem's name all over it. The Ramban tells us that the Torah is names of Hashem. The Ramban says there's a way to arrange the Torah where if you break up the letters in different places, not the way they're broken up now, it'll just be a list of names of Hashem. The whole Torah is an experience of Hashem. It's when we learn Hashem's Torah, we are, our minds are bonding with the revelation of Hashem himself. There's a tremendous holiness within the Torah. So even if some letters are worn out, there's a residual holiness, and that residual holiness never leaves. That's the power of Kedusha. A mitzvah, it's great to do the mitzvah. When the mitzvah passes, the holiness is gone. When there's a residual holiness, a roshem, something left, an impression left of the sanctity, you can't discard the object. You have to bury the object. There's still a residual holiness. Originally, back in Parshas B'Shalach, when the Jewish people didn't have water, Hashem told Moshe, take a staff and hit the rock. Moshe did what he was supposed to do. Took the staff, hit the rock, and water came out. What was that action? Was that an action of mitzvah? Moshe did a mitzvah. Hashem told him to hit the rock. And the rock now became an item of a mitzvah. Or was that an action of kedusha? When Moshe was about to hit the rock, he reached such a level of holiness, such a level of attachment to Hashem. He felt God all over him. He felt that he's serving God. He's just an emissary of God. That the touching of the rock was as if God's presence came down in front of that rock, and God's presence made the rock produce water. And it's as if it was an act of Kedusha. It's a Sefer Torah act, not a mitzvah act. What was it? There'd be a big difference. If Moshe's hitting of the rock back in Parshas B'Shalach was a mitzvah act, he was an emissary. He did what God told him to do. So then, the rock itself is a mitzvah item. A mitzvah item, once it's no longer doing the mitzvah, can be thrown out. And you have to start again from scratch. But if when Moshe hit the rock originally, he was with a full sense of surrender to God, and he felt, God is doing this, I'm being used by him, but it's all him. It's him doing the whole thing. It's his presence is making the water come. then if there'd be a sense of Kedusha, then the rock is an item of a Sefer Torah. It's not an item of mitzvah. It's a Sefer Torah item. Then there's a residual holiness, even if the water's not coming out. So it's like a Sefer Torah that has to be buried. It's like the Temple Mount, even when we don't have a temple. There's still a residual holiness. Hashem tells Moshe, talk to the rock. Now talk to the rock. The second time, you only have to talk. You don't have to hit. First time to get water out, you have to hit. But now talk. Because what's Hashem saying? You reached a great level of holiness the first time around. The first time around, when you hit the rock, you were so filled with holiness. It was as if Hashem was getting the water out of the rock. The rock became a Sefer Torah. Now all you need to do is talk, because there's residual holiness here. Talk and the water's going to come out again. And Moshe Rabbeinu, though, he struggled with that because he didn't believe in himself. Yeah, that was the goal. The goal was to reach such a level of holiness. But he didn't believe in himself that he had really reached that level of holiness. He thought, when I hit the rock, I was an emissary. The rock was a mitzvah item. So once the water stops, the mitzvah's finished. I have to start again from scratch. That's why Moshe hit the rock. And Hashem tells Moshe, you didn't believe in me. You didn't believe fully in what I told you. Because you didn't believe in yourself. You didn't believe that the first time around you had reached such a deep level of attachment that your actions were creating a Sefer Torah, creating an item of Kedusha. You thought, I'm just doing a mitzvah. You can't enter the land of Israel. You didn't believe in me fully. You didn't have the full attachment. And the root of his not believing was that he didn't believe in himself. So when we read this parsha, it has to inspire us to realize that when Hashem gives us mitzvos and great goals to reach, to believe in ourselves, we can reach those levels. We can serve Hashem. We can succeed in doing all the things He wants us to do. And hopefully Bezrat Hashem will see that all the mitzvos that we do are lasting mitzvos, mitzvos of Kedusha, that Hashem was doing it, and His presence is here, and His presence stays forever. Thank you all very much. So good to see everybody.